Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning for this Monday, the 15th of June. Very nice to have you with us, as always. Let me introduce our panel to you, and then we'll get knee-deep in many discussions. In this hour, we have WAMC's Alan Chartok. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning, Joseph. Did you have a good weekend?
It was a lovely weekend. How about you?
Yeah, it was very good.
It was very good. Did you do anything fun? Anything special? Anything?
Well, Noah, the grandchild, was there and he was as usual wonderful. And I got my new robot that cleans our pool.
Oh, that was fun.
It's a bot. Yeah, it's called a bot. It's unbelievably good.
Goes around and sucks up stuff.
It's unbelievable, and it turns itself off when it's done.
Yeah,
and that's our problem. Our problem in society is automation.
Right. Well.
Oh, I thought maybe our problem was we don't turn ourselves off when we're done.
that's a good sociological point.
Well, somebody turns us off when we're done.
No, but I mean like in day-to-day, you know, chatting with
people.
There
is an end date. That's a good point. Yeah. Political consultant Libby Post joins us. Good morning, Libby. You had a busy weekend. I saw all your pictures. You were in a float, for goodness sake.
Yes, I was. Actually, I was sitting in the back of a convertible.
And why shouldn't you?
Well, it's the only way to go, as far as I'm concerned, during Pride. But I had a lovely time. I'm having a hard time with my mic, however.
Help?
Yeah, the thingy isn't doing what it's supposed to do. But anyway, yes, Saturday was very busy with Capitol Pride and I think some other things, but I really can't remember.
Oh, yeah. Well,
and
good.
Yesterday. And so it was good. It was a good weekend.
Very nice. And essayist? Author, editor, activist Barbara Smith.
Hi, Joe.
Back
how are
with
you?
Us. It's wonderful to have you back. Thank you very much for being here. Missed you. So very nice to have you with us. And nice weekend. Do anything?
Yeah. I was at Juneteenth yesterday.
Wow, all kinds of good things happening.
I think it's
yesterday.
The 9th annual Juneteenth.
Nice. It was Flag Day yesterday.
Right. Yes.
It was so much going on. That's great. Okay. So we have a lot to talk about. Many, many. Events to discuss. I realize I'm going to cough here in a second, so I'm going to try to avoid that. There we go. So let's begin with these stories. Well, this is the big one, isn't it? This is the thing that I, at least for me, I just can't get enough of this story. We'll talk about the prison escape and the update on that, mm-hmm. because that's quite a story. But Rachel Dolezal is a woman who is president of the NAACP in Spokane, Washington. And she has professed an affinity for black people since she was a teenager when her parents adopted four black children. She chose a college where she could immerse herself in racial issues. She married a black man and built a reputation as an advocate for civil rights. Then her parents came out last week and said, she's not black. She now was scheduled to have a press conference today. She has canceled that press conference. And there is some question as to not only did she cancel the press conference, but she has not rescheduled the press conference. What started as a story of parents seeming to be upset with their daughter for misrepresenting herself has turned into a major
kerfuffle,
an issue, and
brouhaha.
Yes, a lot of questions that are coming up, and things that I wanted to discuss with the group at large here. Barbara, you want this first?
Well, not actually, but Libby and I were talking about this in the green room earlier, and I was saying that, of course, I'm fascinated by it, but I'm just not as upset as some people I hear talking about it. Now, I'm not quite sure why, and when I found out you wanted me to be on today, I thought, oh my goodness, I'm going to be on the radio not breathing fire about this. So I think it's really complicated, and I watch Melissa Harris Perry on a regular basis. They talked about it both days. She's on, well, another network. It's TV. But in any event, they were talking about it both days, and they have very thoughtful conversations on their fairly long show. And she saw fit to have it discussed 2 days in a row. They didn't resolve anything. But I think that what this once again shows is that race and racial identity is really complex in the United States. There's a play I used to teach a number of years ago that was titled No Place to Be Somebody. And one of the favorite lines in the play that I will always talk about with my students and ask them, so what does this mean? And the line was, there's more to being black than meets the eye. Now, this is in the 1970s. Yeah. So a lot of things had not been, you know, all theory had not been developed at that point. But we would talk about, what does it mean? If it's not about what you see, then what is it?
So we can have the discussion about racial identity here, of what it means and how we identify, which is why there have been so many over the last two or three days, also editorials comparing this in some weird way to Bruce Jenner and Caitlyn Jenner. What my question is that when you seem to go into the history of this woman and her past, especially in the media in Washington and in Spokane, you see a person who seems to be very troubled, who has made several, who seems to look for attention, who seems to make many charges of things that happened that turned out not to be true, the sky is falling kind of thing. Mm-hmm. You know, that's kind
Chicken
of thing.
Little, yeah.
Right, there you go. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know. Do we just end up with one person who seems to be, you know, not right, or another person, or a larger societal issue?
Do you have to be black? Do you have to be black to fully embrace and understand the black experience? To me, the answer is yes. You have to be. You can be somebody. Now, I know somebody who is married to a woman of color, and who has taken on the cudgels of this. This guy's white, has taken on the cudgels of this more vehemently than anybody I know. So I think that part of it is that you can associate with it, you can feel for people, but when you have this massive discrimination that goes on against people just because of the pigment in their skin or the color of their skin, I think it's very hard if you are not to fully understand the complications.
I don't know if that's what was motivating her, because one of the, you know, you talked about the massive discrimination. There's also the incredible history and the culture.
Sure.
So those are aspects of being black in the United States as well.
Isn't that all part of the discrimination pattern? The history and everything else is all part of it, isn't it?
I don't think that our culture is solely defined by discrimination and bigotry. I don't think so. I think we have the same kinds of cultural manifestations and cultural peaks that other, you know, groups do.
That's true.
Yeah. I mean, it's shaped by our identity and our history, but the thing is, I don't think it's all driven by discrimination.
No, but if you walk down the street and you see somebody who is Caucasian or somebody who is black, the way in which Americans have been conditioned is going to say, these are not two people who are the same. They are not, because of the color of their skin in this country and the way that it's gone.
And the thing about color of skin, which is at issue here.
Yes.
Because people took her as a black woman. They were not necessarily. Now, I don't know about, you know, her makeup or whatever, but the thing is that there is an incredible range of skin color within the black community,
and
the African American community,
as a result of that, among blacks.
Right, but that's not exactly where I was going with that. No. What I was trying to say, though, it's not about color of skin; it's your social status based upon the color of your skin. Mm-hmm. Color of your skin, mm-hmm. The color of skin, if you're of African heritage, translates into a social political status. Mm. And there are people who, as far as visuals are concerned, may be darker than some people who are considered to be black, but they are not of African heritage living in the United States. It's really complicated. I don't know about her troubled past.
Turns out, of course, we're all of African heritage.
Yeah, that's a part that I don't know about.
That's where we come from. I know a guy who married a Jewish woman, I was privileged to be at a breakfast one time when the following conversation broke out. The wife said, who was Jewish, he thinks he's Jewish. And he said, I am Jewish. And I said, how do you know that? And he said, because I say so. I said, I'm with you. Now, there, of course, are many people who will say that you're not Jewish until you take the classes, until you do all of this stuff. But I thought that was great because I think part of this life is we are what we say we are. Now, if this woman truly believed that that's what she was, then God bless her as far as I'm concerned.
And Libby?
Well, I like you, Barbara, my hair didn't stand up. I didn't get really angry. I thought, you know, this woman is taking on an identity that, as you well know, is not the easiest identity to have in white America. In America, that's soon not going to be majority white. I did Intro to Feminism. I did all the classes, read some of the same books, not all the same books. But, I was thinking about this driving around yesterday when I was, little Libby the lesbian when I first came out. We talked about downward mobility and because it was all about class and how we work to not take on the trappings of moneyed society. And this woman is taking on an identity that is not one that will open all the doors for her, as you well know.
Yeah, it's so complicated.
It's very, very complicated. It's really very interesting. And on one hand, I give her a lot of credit for doing that, to identify that way, knowing that she was born white, I guess. But she identifies as being black. She identifies with the struggles of the black community clearly, and that's where she wants to put her energy. And
there is the issue though of her. You could do that without taking leadership of a major civil rights organization
and misrepresenting yourself.
Yeah,
as a woman.
That's a part of it. The deception of it. There's also something I think that's really important for people to be thinking about in relationship to this, which is what is the role of a white person who is an anti-racist ally?
Right.
And there is a historical group, didn't just start, day before yesterday, from the time that the United States, or what became the United States, got on this incredibly Byzantine path of racial bigotry and white supremacy. There have been white people who have rebelled against that and said, I'm not buying it, and I'm going to do everything possible to stop that, alter it, and challenge it. That's where the abolitionist movement grew from eventually. So there's a way that one can challenge, and absolutely condemn race as it is organized here without necessarily being.
Can I talk about one part of this, just what you said, which is that the concern here, of course, is that she's, the head of the NAACP in Washington. So, but who brought this story to light? Her parents.
Mm. Yeah.
Parents.
I know.
Weird. And who knows what their motivation is.
That they're, that they keep on saying, this is our daughter. She's representing herself or is that a courageous act? I don't know.
They're strange, but yet they also are the same parents who adopted 4 black children.
Right.
There's something going on there.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what it would be like to be the oldest white daughter, in a family where and it happens all the time. It's not like it's never happened or unusual. But the thing is, obviously, there's something going on there. They adopted 4 black children. She was already here. Mm. And I don't know what that did around, her, identity, consciousness. I don't know how she was treated in the family.
Barbara, we don't know what the other children's role in this was, talking to the parents. In other words, you had this white child and 4 black children. And who knows what pressure has been put on the parents by the other children who were adopted.
Who came first? I mean, were the, did they adopt the kids first?
No, she's the oldest.
No, she was the oldest.
Yes, okay. She's the oldest.
And her brother, her adopted brother, has said that this is my sister doing blackface.
Doing blackface. Yeah, that's a good clue. Bob from Albany wrote in, Joe, and he said, panel, it's not complicated or nuanced or difficult. A lie is a lie is a lie. If she plagiarized the distorted scientific research, we wouldn't be spending a minute parsing her reasons for doing it. Let's stop digging for rationalizations and move on. Tom said on this thing, it's a toss-up. I think we're talking about, yeah, I'm not so sure we're talking about this story or the prison story, but I'll read it anyway, okay, which is a toss-up, a grifter or a sociopath? One way or another, she's put one over on her public.
She's talking about this. Rachel Dolezal.
Yeah, I just want to talk about the concept of passing. Again, a historical reality that goes back centuries. There's a whole literature of passing that's started in the 19th century, novels, novels, you know, devoted to it. And passing, as was pointed out in discussion, as I heard on TV this weekend, passing always embodies a lie. And how do we think about that? Being in the closet embodies a lie.
Right.
So, you know, like it's so.
But she's passing.
She's passing into the oppressed group.
Yes. Instead of passing out of.
Exactly.
Of course, one of the greatest musicals ever written, Showboat, was written around that issue.
Yes, it was.
I like Showboat too. And then there's the fact that Lena Horne didn't get the role and Ava Gardner did. So,
yeah, and then you want to talk about playing blackface.
But very depressing. Yeah. It is very depressing when you think about that.
Yeah. But in that time frame, for Porgy and Bess and Showboat to actually be made and shown to public in the time frame that it was groundbreaking.
We're going to take a break. Just onto what Barbara was saying, a recent study of census data by Yale researchers say that in the late 19th and early 20th centuries, as many as one-fifth of American black men posed as white at some point in their lives in this New York Times article.
Correct me if I'm wrong, because this is what I've heard, that even within the black community, people with lighter skin are seen as differently than people with darker skin.
That's true. And again, there's literature. We don't have to, speculate about it. Charles Chestnut, one of my favorite authors, writing in the early 1900s, probably in the late 19th century too, and a Clevelander, originally from North Carolina, he wrote many stories about the phenomenon of passing and what was called the Blue Vein Society. And when I was growing up in Cleveland, one of my family members talked to me and told me about, they're part of the Blue Vein Society.
Barbara, I have to pause you there because we just have to go to a break. But we'll be back. We'll continue this conversation. We'll get your letters and more. Alan and Libby and Barbara, we'll be back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. I'm Joe Donahue. Libby Post is here. Barbara Smith. Alan Chartok. Here we are.
You want some letters?
Yeah.
Okay. Transracial is the topic line. And listening to any report about this woman as portraying herself as black instead of white, and listening to enter report about this woman is portray herself as black instead of white, I imagine how different the reporting would be if she was simply portraying herself as a different gender instead of a different race. For instance, if you were speculating on why she would do this, is it because of her parents or her siblings? This is a question that would never be asked if she was simply portraying herself as a male instead of a female. That's from Todd.
Yeah.
All right. Diane says, if someone can say, I was born in the wrong body, I'm really a boy or a girl, can someone say, I was born in the wrong body, I'm really black? I admit this is confusing to me. Anybody? Just jump in if you need. Okay, Christopher says, fascinating discussion. I love Barbara Smith's new book. My grandmother told us she was Native American. We believed her because we grew up in Oklahoma. After she died, a cousin and I began to work on a family tree, a la Henry Louis Gates, Oprah's Roots book. We discovered when we performed DNA tests on ourselves and her progeny that we had not Native American DNA and that she was indeed white. Examination on census data confirmed that. Turned out to be the early 1900s when my grandmother married our black grandfather, that interracial white-black was strictly illegal. A Native American could marry a black at the time. It's another example of reverse passing.
Interesting.
And Todd says, oh, we did that one. And Ted says, this is an issue of racial identity. Let's not merge all discrimination issues, religion, sexual identity, etc., into it. Many times when discussing black issues in America, we dilute the dialogue with so many other issues. And by the way, while I have a chance here, Joe, we've heard from Madeline Cuomo this morning, who we like very much, and wants to remember that this is Mario Cuomo's birthday today. And we're doing
that. Oh, happy birthday.
Well, first year. Yes, very tough. We welcome your letters. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Let's move on to the other story that we've been following, of course, and that is the prison escape. The governor spoke yesterday at an event in Yonkers, and Andrew Cuomo saying that they could be near the prison, they could be in Mexico by now, and which I think, at least for me, was the first time, especially after Friday, of, you know, we're closing in, we got them around, you know, we got them surrounded, and then that all sort of evaporated very quickly, which, you know, how do you know? And then, of course, the arrest of the woman in the tailor shop.
Yeah.
Were you responding to that? What were you responding to?
I just read Fred Dicker's piece in the Post.
Yeah.
This is outrageous in terms of throwing everyone out of the room, including a U.S. Marshal. There's no coordination.
Well, first of all, you have to believe what he's saying.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And maybe you do, and maybe you
don't.
Maybe you don't,
but there's the lack of coordination.
Okay,
but
so what is he saying?
There seems like there's a lot of people saying the same thing, that there's no coordination.
No, people who are listening may not get it, Libby. What you're saying is that Cuomo threw everybody else out of the
room,
the U.S.
Marshals
and everybody.
Except the state people, state police.
Yeah.
And that there's no coordination. Amongst all the parties working here to find these
guys. We have heard
guys.
There's problems between the FBI and the state police.
Right, and the state police.
As the old saying goes, and so what's new?
Yeah.
I mean, that's really what has characterized a lot of these criminal justice efforts.
Right, and then the people who are still in Dannemora, the prisoners, are the ones who are suffering.
As they're locking them all up. And
this morning in the New York Times article, and the women who married these men or who are, you know, partnered with these men can't get word in. Don't know if they're okay. Don't know what's going on.
They're getting their medication.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and there's no right, and since there is no communication, no one really knows what the situation is within inside the prison as a result of what's going on outside in the search for these two men who escaped more than a week ago.
Yeah. This is called locking the barn door.
Yeah. How long? What? I mean, in recent history. So say. The last 50 years when you've had a prison break. Is this one of the longest times it's been since someone like this kind of break has been not captured?
Well, the state number said, 98% were done within 36 hours?
Yeah.
You know, so.
This lends itself to all kinds of interesting theories, which we are going to be beset with. Well, people are going to be saying this is all an elaborate ruse to get them out of here. The whole story about the woman and, you know, and all the rest was I'm not making any of this up because I don't happen to believe it. I think these guys escaped and they knew it. And it's probable that they knew what they were doing and that they had some kind of an escape route planned, because otherwise I think that they would have been grabbed by now. And I think that it's really going to turn out to be a lot more simple than any of the theories that are going to be raised by a million people.
Mm-hmm. When you say it's a ruse, what do you mean? That what part of it is?
No, I'm not saying it. Mm-hmm. I'm saying we are going to expect, in the same way that a billion people have been accused of assassinating Kennedy because we don't know, that there's going to be that here, too.
Yeah.
That there'll be all kinds of theories.
Conspiracy theories
about how this all happened.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and I think when you talk about the question of timing in this, of what we know about timing, that if there was a case where what you just described, Libby, of, you know, very much in control and there isn't the coordination that there needed to be at a very sensitive time, and now, you know, we don't know, because you have that window, what's that, like 48-hour window, where you still have a chance of finding them close. And but we also don't know how much time they had prior to even being from the time that they were found that they were out.
Right.
You know, was 8 hours.
Right.
Now, of course, they don't know that, but still.
Who's the they in this case?
The escapees.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they wouldn't have known that it would have taken. They could have been 2 hours. They wouldn't have known that.
Right.
So, but still, you assume you're going to run like hell, right? Is that
no, sure.
What would be the assumption?
Particularly with no vehicle. That's all of it's really.
Well, Barbara, but you think about this for a second, as I know you are, that when they planned this escape, this was really unbelievable stuff. The way they did it, all of the planning that went into it. You would have to assume they also had a pretty good plan about how they were going to get out of there. Now, we hear that this woman, Joyce, whatever her name
right.
is.
Right, Joyce Mitchell.
Who's
Mitchell,
now over in Rensselaer County.
Right. said, you know, I'll pick you up and we'll do it that way.
And then they were going to kill her husband, supposedly.
Yeah, well, you know, this is all the stuff right. now.
What I still don't understand is how come nobody heard it? How come nobody heard them working on
well,
the pipes and doing all that stuff?
In the middle of the night.
In the middle of the night where it's supposed to be quiet. How could this be? It just doesn't
make any
sense.
Maybe that's why the whole prison population is being punished.
What, because they all made noise? Or
because
they
didn't.
Knew?
Many of them knew it.
It's not up to them. It's up to the people who work
there. Well, by the way, I couldn't agree with you more.
I mean, come on. It's not the responsibility
of
the
prisoners. But we all know that you punish those people who don't deserve it. In this case,
this is well. I want to just talk about the article that you did share with us about what the wives and partners of these men are going through. They don't have access. They can't communicate directly. They can't even get letters in or out at this point. I just wanted to say that what that article brought to my mind is how difficult the prison situation is in general, and that when an individual goes to prison, the entire family does the time. That's what I saw
in that article. Well, Barbara, and on top of that, we know that upstate, in terms of its economic profile, is a basket case. We know that. Cuomo knows that. He didn't get many votes, you know, upstate.
Right.
So anything for upstate. Now, they've closed down some prisons. No two ways about it, because the prison population has gone down. Yet, think about this. The largest percentage of people who are incarcerated from New York City. And where are they incarcerated? On the Canadian border.
Right.
Now, when you talk about families getting to see their right. loved ones and others, there's no way that that's going to happen because it's just so expensive
exactly.
and so long and can't. I wrote about that in my column this week because it really does raise that issue. Those prisons ought to be closer to New York City, and it ought to be, and we know what it is, it's a NIMBY. It's not in my backyard. Nobody's
right,
going
right,
to want a prison.
Right, and it talked about like getting up or leaving New York City at 10 o'clock at night
right.
or something like that,
then,
or even
right.
earlier to get to
yeah.
the bus.
That leaves at 10.
At 10, which is probably at the George Washington Bridge or something like that, and
sure.
then traveling all night long, washing up in the prison, you know, restrooms, that is, in the visitors area of the prison, and then just, you know, having a few hours. I've actually been to that prison and visited someone there, so I have a real image of how stark, you know, mm-hmm. the setting is. But, of course, I was able to go in a car, and I lived in Albany, so it wasn't quite the same
right.
kind of thing,
yeah.
nor was I taking children or whatever. It's just, it needs to be fixed. The whole situation needs to be fixed. I don't get how they had access to contractors' tools. That's a part of it. I guess yeah. that policy will change
now. Do we
now.
Know that's the case?
That's what was in the paper.
Yeah.
Well,
do you
what believe
was in
everything
the story?
In the paper? Yeah.
Well, it was in the Times.
Yeah. You believe everything?
Well,
well, then if we don't believe anything that's reported, then where are we going to get
well,
on
it
that?
Is. It is what it was part of the case that they have lodged against this woman,
mm-hmm.
And it is also in the several press conferences that they have had. This is the information that they have released. So, you know, I will assume that is what happened. I don't know. Let's take a break. We'll be right back, and we'll continue our conversation on the roundtable. We welcome your comments, roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org. We'll be right back.
Support comes from Field Goods, providing year-round deliveries of produce from local farms for pickups at workplaces or community sites, and offering workplace wellness programs. Field-goods.com. Springbrook, Oneonta, New York, supporting people of all ages with developmental disabilities, working in schools and homes and in communities across New York to help individuals achieve independence. SpringbrookNY.org. Bethel Woods Center for the Arts, hosting the Mormon Tabernacle Choir in concert with the orchestra at Temple Square, Saturday, June 27th at 7:30. BethelWoodsCenter.org for tickets. And from the Digital Berkshire Eagle, an online newspaper for news and information of the Berkshires and beyond, NoInkyFingers.com.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Monday morning. We welcome your letters, roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org. Alan?
Okay, so we heard from Waldron. Alan, I can't wait for the movie. You know it's coming. And Rachel, and Jay says, the problem with Ms. Dolezal's reverse passing is that she's missed an opportunity to be a true ally. The issue of racial injustice can never be fully addressed until it moves out of the realm of being perceived as a black issue, as black people playing the race card. As a white woman who is passionate about racial justice, her voice could have been invaluable in elevating the conversation on a national level. It is a shame that she felt like she had to minimize her race to make a difference when her race could have been her greatest asset. And Michael says, Libby, I heard they muffle the sound of drills with blankets, a fact kept from the press to be able to verify a confession. Christopher says, please discuss the role of cuts to the prison budget by Governor Cuomo. His early overwhelming involvement made me stop and ask why. And Ken says, folks up here in the DAX can sleep tight. These escapees didn't just get tools. They got clothes and tickets, Amtrak to New York City, and that's from Ken. And you know that, Hal? I don't know that. Okay. Let's see here. Don says, it's only a matter of time before the Republicans tie the prison escape to Benghazi and Hillary. I think he writes that about everything, by the way. Is it possible Ms. Dolezal's parents are the ones with something to hide? She might be telling the truth that both of them are passing, quote, and that's from Mike. And Suzanne says, please do not equate gender identity with racial identity. One can write one's future, but one cannot rewrite one's past. Trans women do not claim to be lifelong victims of misogyny before their transition. The way that this woman has laid claim to the history of discrimination and suffering she did not experience. And that's from Suzanne. And Steve says, exactly smart enough to accomplish this, smart enough to have a backup car and use Joyce Miller as a decoy. That's exactly what I was trying to say before. Mm-hmm. Those will be the kinds of theories that we will be hearing and perhaps seeing. And Joel says, Joel from Port Jervis, if they only capture Richard Matt, will the headline in the next day's paper be No Sweat? and that's it.
Okay. We welcome your letters, roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org. So let's see, where do we want to go? Let's go to same-sex marriage in Mexico with little fanfare. Mexican Supreme Court legalizes same-sex marriage. This is interesting because in ruling after ruling, the court has said that state laws restricting marriage to heterosexuals are discriminatory. Though the decisions have been made to little public fanfare, they have had the effect of legalizing gay marriage in Mexico without enshrining the law.
Gay. All right. More and more, it's becoming a non-issue, and which is, it should be ultimately a non-issue. It should be, we should all be able to get married to another consenting adult. I'm not saying we should be able to marry our dogs or marry our cats or our brothers or our sisters, but another unrelated consenting adult. You know, to have this in Mexico, which is an incredibly Catholic country,
yes.
Also in Brazil, you know, which is also an incredibly Catholic country, and the Pope comes from South America, and he wasn't happy when, I think he was from Venezuela, when they did it, you know, or wherever he was from. I'm not sure if that was the case, but he was not happy where with the country that did it. You know, this is progress. It's just that simple. We're now all on tenterhooks here, waiting for the U.S. Right. Supreme Court to come down with its decision. I think it'll be the last day of their session, which is, I think, next week, the last whatever that is, one of the last days of June. And people are laying bets. Is it going to be 4-5, 5-4, 7-2, 6-3? How is it going to come down? I think it's going to come down on, they're going to come down on the right side of history. I think you'll have the four who, Thomas, Scalia, the other two really conservative guys, and Kennedy will be the swing, which he has been in the past.
Mm. So, no, the point you made about Mexico being such a Catholic mm-hmm. Country, I find that really interesting because it's the culture too.
Yes.
So
yes.
If it could happen,
yeah,
there.
It can happen anywhere. We can all start dancing. Right. You know, and then the Catholic Church gets all their knickers in a twist about it, but yet, you know, more and more of these guys are getting shown up for being hypocrites around child sexual abuse. So, you know, you can't... I'm sorry, guys.
I would take a slightly different point of view on your comment about the Pope. I think the very fact that the Pope has indicated... you know, more laissez-faire.
In a sense,
Has to have helped a court come down with that decision. And I also think that the anti-clericalism that has always existed in heavily Catholic states, like Italy, is in play here. Every once in a while, when people feel that they've been told what to do for a long, long time, this becomes a sort of a revolutionary approach.
Yeah. I mean, the Pope has, on some levels... you know, who am I to judge, that whole, his whole thing, which was great. But he also has come out pretty clearly on marriage as a way, I think, to ameliorate the more conservative parts of the establishment of the Catholic Church, the College of Cardinals, Ratzinger's folks. I mean, that's who we're talking about. Sure. It's the guys that elevated Ratzinger to being Pope, and who refused for there to be any change. And so he's got a very thin line that he can step on here.
But Libby, when he said, and I think this is the key to it all, who am I to judge?
Right.
That was,
I get it.
That was really the open door.
Yes. True. I agree. But then again, he then also has to toe that line to keep the more conservative elements of the church happy. You know, I mean, I don't know. Can they do a recall? Do they ever do that?
No, but there have been rumors of something far more nefarious
than
that.
Yes, that's right. And that has happened.
Yeah, you're talking about the poisonings and the killings, right?
Yeah,
but that was a century ago, right?
Well, we watched for the first time The Agony and the Ecstasy the other night. We were looking for something to watch. I'd never known any of that story about Michelangelo and Pope Julius.
Julius was a great man.
And I think that's what it was. He was the Pope who went to war all the time to try to defend the...
When I say great, I mean pronounced.
Yeah, right.
I don't mean I endorse his actions.
I mean, he was really... I mean, as far as it was Rex Harrison's portrayal, he was sort of a megalomaniac, but I think they all are. But, you know, it was very interesting to see that and then look at what's happening in the church now. Now, I know the Agony Ecstasy was just a fictionalized version of what really happened, but there's got to be something in there somewhere, and the handling of Michelangelo's sexuality in the movie was very interesting. I'm in love with my work. I can't be in love with you.
And I'm going to make a David.
Right, and besides, you're married. Right, and I'm going to make a David. I love the marble.
All right, so let's conclude with the story in the Times this morning in the upshot about health care. To lose weight, eating less.
It's a very important story.
To lose weight, eating less is far more important than exercising more. And this is by Aaron Carroll, which is he's talking about The Biggest Loser and feeling that there often is too much of the TV show that it's often places too much of an emphasis on exercise, and then goes into some great detail about recent studies that that show that exercise is one part, but not the biggest part.
I'm here to tell you, because I have exercised every single day for an hour, aerobic exercise, that you don't lose weight, and I've always known that. You don't lose weight because of exercise. You just don't. Your heart gets stronger, no question about it. It's good for you, but you don't lose weight. You lose weight by counting calories. That's how you do it. You eat less, and you're going to lose weight. Eat more, you're going to gain weight. It's really that simple.
It is that simple, because I've been on Metafast.
Yeah.
Since January, I've lost 30 pounds. And
congratulations.
Thank you. And the times when I do eat more, I do gain a little weight. And when I go back and I'm very studious about it, I lose weight.
I have one other theory. Don't put anything in your mouth after 5 o'clock at night.
Well, that's true, but it's hard.
Because when I do that,
yeah.
When I really do it, and if you have to put something in your mouth, make sure it's a stewed vegetable, then it'll work.
Thank you for the image. We really appreciate it. I'm shivering.
Those of you who are not watching this on our streaming device, understand that Barbara just made a horrible face.
Well, the idea of stewed vegetables after 5, oh my goodness.
Well,
I was before five.
Yeah. Right.
Yes.
No.
All right. That's all the time we have.
All
we have time for this morning. There you go. And I want to thank everyone, Alan and Barbara and Libby. Thank you so much. And we will see you all very soon. The roundtable continues after this.